I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Because you know what? It is all about food. Everything that you can think of, I think, is related to food. Our health, the environment, animals, all life on Earth. It's connected to the food we eat and what we're doing to get food in our mouths. And every time we sit down at the table, we really should be thinking, at least for a moment, where that food came from and the incredible path it took to get to the point where it's on our plate and we get to enjoy it. Something a lot of us take for granted. Okay, so I want to bring on my next guest, Sebastiano Cosia Castiglioni. And he was born in Milan, Italy in 1966. He has been a vegetarian and an animal rights activist for nearly 30 years. He's the owner and chairman of one of the most renowned and pioneering wineries in Europe. He has been a vegetarian and an animal rights activist for nearly 30 years. He's the owner and chairman of one of the most renowned and pioneering wineries in Europe, Quercia Bella, where organic viticulture implemented in 1988 led to a complete conversion to strict biodynamic practices in 2000. His Tuscan wines have garnered worldwide acclaim, including Best Italian Wine in 2004. Sebastiano is an industrial designer and the creator of a multinational business network encompassing fields as varied as agriculture, financial advisory, advanced technology, and real estate. He currently lives with his family in Northern Europe. Welcome to It's All About Food.
Thank you, Karen. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm so glad I got to meet you last week and to coordinate it so that you could come into the Manhattan studio, because you're not always here. And
absolutely. And it's a pleasure to touch on the subjects that you often talk about. I'm convinced that really it is all about food. And we need to start asking ourselves some serious questions. And that's what we did when we started figuring out a different way to produce wine. And not only we approached it from the organic standpoint, which I think is a must nowadays. I mean, how else can we think to do anything responsibly, sustainably, and in a healthy way if not going the organic way? But as you know, we also share a passion for animals and for their well-being. And so I thought about how to create an agricultural complex, a farm, that would work without ever using any animal-based product. And it is possible. We're doing it. We have been doing it for years now. And now the question is, I don't know if you want me to explain a little bit about biodynamics.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Not too many know. We all know more or less what organic is. You take away all the harmful chemical products and get rid of them. With biodynamics, you take a much wider approach, and you're actually very proactive. So what you're trying to do is to bring nature back into agriculture. So you're trying to reestablish an ecosystem where nature does what it normally does, what it does best. And so there are lots of techniques that we use. Most importantly, cover crops. Cover crops are these plants that you plant among the ones that you're growing for food. And so in vineyards, for instance, we plant every year, we plant every other row with this wonderful mix of flowers and aromatic herbs, legumes, and you name it. It's 32 to 36 different plants, depending on the period, on the area.
Do you use those legumes and herbs?
Because the way you use it in biodynamics is you plant them between rows, and when they come into, when they bloom, when they come into flower, you cut them and mix them into the soil. And this brings so many nutrients back to the soil. You might be familiar with the fact that legumes, for instance, extract certain substances and give back nitrogen to the soil. And so what you do with this process is, first of all, these plants have a fantastic influence on everything around them while they're growing and they're in flower. So, for instance, at our winery, Quercia Bella, we have a fantastic population of bees that we support by planting tons of organic flowers all year round. And by the way, I'd love to say that these bees produce a ton of honey, which we do not harvest. We only take what's in excess and bothers them. Actually, there are it's a very long story. And Jane, my wife, Jane, is the one who deals with all of this, and she's the mastermind behind all the work on the bees. But anyway, there are certain ways to build beehives that are more natural to the bees, where they live happier, and believe it or not, they produce exactly what they need and very little extra. So, you know, all we take is what bothers them when they need to move around, but we leave them all their honey, which they need in the winter. Anyway, back to the cover crops. They have fantastic functions. For instance, there are plants like mustard that repel funguses, and there are plants that attract certain insects that are beneficial. There are other plants that repel other insects that you don't want to have around because they're damaging to the grapes. Mm. And so there's this fantastic balance. And there are scientific studies that show that where you have cover crops, you have 20 times more animal species around than you have where you don't. And so imagine...
Now is that might be good for nature, but does that affect the grapes at all in a negative way?
Well, it does in many ways. First of all, the vine is a vine, as the word says. So, yes, it's normally, hardnessed into, a system where it grows and this and that. But if you let it grow more freely, mm-hmm. it will actually produce much better grapes mm-hmm. and a better fruit. And so this environment that has lots of insects and birds and where the soil is fantastic. Imagine that the goal is to obtain a soil that is very similar to what you find in a forest, to humus in a forest. So it's very soft, it's humid. In some of our vineyards, you can stick your arm into the soil, and it goes all the way to the elbow. Mm. It's so soft. Mm-hmm. So imagine this environment that is very conducive to nature being in balance with itself and the fruit that you obtain. We all know the difference between the flavor of a conventional carrot and an organic carrot, and it's shocking. The difference is mm-hmm. shocking. Now, imagine a fruit that not only is organic, but is lived in an environment that is as natural as it gets, with all the flora and fauna and the insects and the microorganisms that are supposed to be there, and they normally are not because they're all killed. And so biodynamics tries to recreate this balance and this beautiful ecosystem where life is abundant and beautiful. And
I can't believe that that's not going to add to the flavor.
Well, what happens is, technically speaking, the roots go much deeper. There's no irrigation in biodynamics, and, of course, no fertilizers. And, of course, we do not use manure because that's against our principles. So what the vines do is they grow these roots that go very deep down. They go 45, sometimes 60 feet underground.
Wow.
So their nourishment comes from very deep in the soil and comes from this beautiful soil. So they, of course, there's some nourishment from the surface, from this very soft soil that I described, but there's also nourishment from deep down. And so what you get is a wine fruit, and therefore a wine that is very mineral, is very rich in deep flavors, it respects, let's say it reflects much more the character of the place where it grows.
You mentioned that there's no irrigation use.
Yes.
I remember maybe 5 years ago or something, France didn't use irrigation, and then they made it legal to irrigate in their vineyards.
Yes.
Which is kind of, I guess...
Well, in France, actually, they have irrigated for a longer time, but they usually irrigated only when the vineyards were, when the vines were very small and this and that. There are always excuses to use irrigation. But just imagine a vine that is nourished from the surface with horrible petroleum-based fertilizers, and the roots turn upwards, and, you know, everything mm-hmm. is dead, basically, because the soil is absolutely dead. And the difference is a soil that is completely alive. You look at our soil and you see insects going all over the place and birds flying around. The birds tend to nest all around these places and these plants because, of course, they eat the insects. And, I mean, the whole cycle is beautiful. And that's a fundamental difference. The interesting part is, as it often happens to those who do things differently, we get criticized all the time. And the funniest thing is I have people coming up to me and saying, but is there any scientific basis to biodynamics? And they say, well, Let's assume for a second that there's no basis for what we do. There are hundreds of scientific studies that show that conventional agriculture is dangerous, harmful, and damaging to the world, to people, to animals, and to everybody else. So just because of that, I think it makes sense to explore alternative venues. Then there are people who say it cannot work because, you know, when then you have sicknesses and you have this and you have the weather and this and that. Well, guess what? We've been organic since 1988. Not a single molecule of chemical product has been sprayed on our vineyards since then, and we're doing great. Mm-hmm. And in fact, many times we do better than our neighbors who spray all the time.
Does that affect you at all, that your neighbors around you are spraying?
Well, actually, I'm talking about the neighbors, but we luckily have very few neighbors. In fact, most of our vineyards are surrounded by forest, luckily, mm-hmm. and we border with only one guy in one specific spot, and we are working very hard to convince him not to spray in every possible way, but it's a microscopic contact. For the rest, we're very protective. But what I meant by neighbors, I meant other people in Tuscany or in the region of Chianti Classico who, grow vines in a conventional way.
It's frustrating what people will believe without really being knowledgeable. So this is kind of an analogy, but last week I was talking with Brian Clement, who works at the Hippocrates Institute, and he just put out a book called Food is Medicine, and I really didn't understand the point of the book, because all it is lists of studies that have been done with a brief description of the results on all of these different foods and how they affect health. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I can go on the internet and, you know, find this out stuff out. But he said he goes to these conferences where doctors and nutritionists say, oh, you know, I don't believe, you know, what work has been done showing plants are healthy. Healthier. And now he has, here it is, here's the book.
And it is very important.
You need like something like, here it
Absolutely.
Is, here's all the organic vineyards, biodynamic vineyards that are doing it.
Absolutely.
And here's all the studies that show chemical pesticides are dangerous. And
you bet. And, you know, the greatest demonstration is opening a bottle, drinking the wine, tasting it, and, wow, it's great. And we as you mentioned, we won the award for best Italian wine. It can be done. You know, it certainly can be done. And paraphrasing my friend Elon Musk, the creator of the Tesla and many other things, he says, I don't want to hear complaints from losers. All I want to hear is ideas from people who actually do things.
Right.
I'm tired to listen to people who sit there, criticize, and don't do anything.
Well, that's a problem in this country, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Well, that's a problem everywhere.
But the biodynamic thing, I was talking to somebody about it recently, and he kind of rolled his eyes because he thought about the woo-woo-wah-wah stuff that's associated with biodynamics. So what part of it, I imagine there's a range of what biodynamics is, because
Absolutely.
There really isn't an official...
The way it is biodynamics is based on these conferences that Rudolf Steiner held at the beginning of the 20th century, and then... One part of biodynamics, this group decided to codify everything he said and establish these very strict rules. But what Steiner actually said is, these are my ideas. You have to adapt them to your environment and dynamically, transform them to better your environment. The main concept is create an ecosystem that is in balance with the rest of the planet.
Work with nature and not against it.
So now there are the biodynamic zealots who say that you have to do it this way and not that way, and if you change an iota, it's not the real thing. And then there are people like us who adapt it and actually go much further than the original, ideas or the codified ideas. So, for instance, we have banned all animal-based products. You may have heard of the biodynamic thing, the cow horn that's filled with manure and it's buried underground and then blah, 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 blah. Well, there are very useful things there, and I could go into that, but the point is you don't really need a cow horn and you don't need, you know, cow intestines to transform other products that then you spray on your vineyards. You can do it all plant-based, and it can be done. It's done, not only by us. There's a very famous woman called Maria Thun who has codified the biodynamic calendar, and she publishes every year the calendar that we all follow about, that instructs you about the best time to plant and to harvest and this and this and that. But it can be done. It can be done. And regarding the, you know, the esoteric image of biodynamics, I concur. I think, in general, the perception and the substance in many cases is absurd.
Mm-hmm.
and what, you know, I am an atheist. I despise astrology. I have no time whatsoever for any new wave nonsense. So I'm completely separate from all the woo-woo surrounding biodynamics. And in fact, I'm more interested in scientific evidence that is mounting and it's growing about the positive effects of biodynamics and the way nature and plants interact. For instance, there's this fantastic scientist called Peter Barlow in England who's been collecting information about something very important. We know that our ancestors for thousands of years relied on moon phases to decide when to work in the fields. And only during the 20th century it's been considered a superstition, but it makes complete sense. And these studies by Peter Barlow show that the strongest force in the life of plant is the interaction between the moon and the sun and the gravitational forces they create. So we all know that plants live by the sun, that they point towards light, and the temperature influences their life. But guess what? If you put plants inside a closed box with no temperature change and no light, they will still move every few hours. And no one could explain why they were moving until Peter Barlow figured out that it was the exact coincidence with gravitational phases of the moon. So this force is so strong, as we can see with the ocean tides, that it influences the life of plants completely. Now, we don't have a manual that says exactly, you know, if the moon is like this, this is what you have to do. But what we're doing is we're trying to learn and listen and try and empirically establish what works best. And believe me, there are huge differences. The most basic experiment being plant during a certain phase and see how much it grows, planted during another and see that it grows three times as fast. And, you know, who can explain that?
But, well, you know, we think we're so smart and we have so much to learn.
Absolutely.
And just by paying attention, we might learn a lot more. I just know as humans, a lot of us are affected by the phase of the moon just in terms of our moods.
Absolutely.
And there's evidence of that. So there's a lot of magic out there that
Absolutely.
We haven't quite figured out that really isn't magical. It just
Absolutely.
Looks like it is.
And especially, you know, for thousands of years, people have used certain techniques. They must make sense. I mean, it can't be that throughout the world, you know, lunar phases were followed in places as varied as Latin America, Australia, and Europe when they had no contact with each other. It's,
right.
you know, how could that be? Obviously.
Have you heard of veganic agriculture?
Yes, I have.
So maybe what you're doing is I'm like trying to come up with another name, biodynamic or bio-veganic.
The way we call it is cruelty-free biodynamics.
Mm-hmm.
I like that because I focus on this mostly because I care about the animals. So I want to emphasize the fact that the alternatives require cruelty. We all know that there's no sustainable way to farm animals, to grow animals in a farm, no matter what kind of model is put in front of our eyes. And we all know that raising animals for any purpose in agriculture means suffering and pain to them. And so I want to focus on the fact that cruelty is part of that model, and I'm against it, and I want to do without it.
Well, I love that you're doing without it, and there are some that believe you need animal manure, and they use that to justify having animals. But then I think, okay, so have a few cows and chickens. You don't have to kill them. Why don't you just let them hang out?
But then again, we are the demonstration that you do not need manure.
Exactly.
You can use green manure. Not only we grow grapes, but we now have, I don't know if I ever mentioned this to you, but we now grow all of our grains and all of our legumes and all of the plants and all of the flowers, the herbal, you know, the herbs that we need for our preparations. And we grow everything ourselves in biodynamic fields without a molecule of manure. Manure is not necessary. In fact, plants are much happier when you feed them with plants.
I don't want this shit.
Yeah, that's, you know, think about a forest. Yes, okay, there's the occasional animal who dies in the middle of a forest that nourishes the soil there. But mostly what is it fed by? It's leaves and other plants that die. Mm-hmm. It's so natural. And that's where you find, guess what, the most wonderful soil, and if you imagine your ideal soil is the one that grows at the bottom of a forest. So that's the ideal soil if you wanted to do the most wonderful agriculture in the world. So why go and reinvent everything and bring animals into the picture when they don't belong? I mean, they belong free, happy, alive, and flying around and playing. We have a population of rabbits that is incredible, and we have all the most beautiful animals you can imagine. But they're happy, they eat the plants there, and, mm-hmm. and that's it.
I'm just curious, how did you get started being an animal rights activist and getting into biodynamic
agriculture? I was 15 years old, and by chance I saw some literature about vivisection, and so I became engaged in that. And of course, once you see that, you cannot eat meat anymore, and so I became a vegetarian
overnight.
Well,
some people can, unfortunately.
Well, I couldn't. It didn't make sense to me to say, oh, I don't want animals to suffer and experience, but I'm going to have them slaughtered and killed and tortured for my food. So I just made the decision, and overnight I became a vegetarian, and now I'm vegan. I'm vegetarian every once in a while socially when I can't avoid it because I travel a lot for mm-hmm. work. And in some countries, the word vegan has not even appeared in the dictionary yet. But I certainly am involved in animal rights activism, and I have been since then. And I'm honored to be on the advisory board of Sea Shepherd. And mm-hmm. I would like to take a chance, if you'd let me, to send a heartfelt hug to Paul Watson,
wherever you are.
Dear Paul, we're with you. And but you know, I think it all goes together.
Mm-hmm. Well, the message that I really like to give is that we can eat delicious food, we can drink wonderful tasting wines, and we can do it in balance with nature. Now, some people may believe that you can't produce enough food or enough wine by growing in this way.
It's quite the opposite. We have fantastic fertile soil, and there are thousands of scientific studies that show that organic and biodynamic soil is more fertile, and especially that it's going to be fertile forever, whereas conventional soil might be overnourished for a while, and then it dies, and it becomes desert. So it's the opposite of what. So for one fertile acre of conventional soil, you know that thousands are going to die, and it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. Well,
you know that thousands are going to die, and it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for making wine. We're not drinking anything else anymore, just Corchivella.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. Where can people learn more about your wine?
Oh, we have a website, Corchivella.com. So Q-U-E-R-C-I-A-B-E-L-L-A.com. And our wine is sold throughout the U.S. It's actually the United States, our number one market. So.
And I noticed you're on Barnivore.com.
Absolutely.
Which is where we find out all our vegan wines and alcoholic beverages.
You bet. We're
okay.
There.
Great.
Fantastic.
Thank you
so much.
I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Please visit my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Send me a note at info@realmeals.org. And don't forget, have a delicious week. Bye-bye.